your city, your mayor. Melissa in the Morning with Mayor Joe Ganim, WICC 600.
Mayor Ganim, a big announcement yesterday with Make the Shift and trying to recruit more officers to the Bridgeport Police Department. This is a pretty cool effort you guys are doing in the city. Do you want to talk about it this morning?
Yeah, I really want to thank. There's a lot of people, you know, you just hear about these things. You don't really know how much effort goes into pulling together the personnel and the resources and the focus and in order to do what you have to do in government is create a process for this will be for the next hiring round of police officers. So a lot of departments put their heads and hard work together. So really appreciate that. As you said, making the shift, asking people to make their shift in their life, maybe into public service. And so we're looking forward to that being, well, that's what was launched yesterday and being a process that begins now and ends with getting the best and the brightest, the best trained, enhancing training within the academy as well. And I'm looking forward to it. So it was a good announcement yesterday, and a lot of people deserve a lot of credit.
Yeah, I mean, and what's cool about this title, I was kind of geeking out with Rowena because I'm so big into like a play on words. So it's like make the shift in your career, make the shift with the having police now be closer to community, and then like literally police talk, making your shift. I just love this concept. And what I also love, Mayor Ganim, is the fact that you guys are staying local with your search, right? Like you're not looking to New York or other like Boston or Worcester. Like you're literally staying in the Bridgeport area for your recruits.
Homegrown is a preference, and with no disrespect, but you know, there's an advantage, and it's not just in Bridgeport, in any community, to knowing the community, possibly growing up or living in it, and that's a plus, and it's not just a kind of a pat on the back. There's points that are given out in the testing process, in all these tests, but in the police test, for instance, here. And then there's the request to have the most diverse, whether it's gender, ethnicity, language abilities are all things we want to incorporate more and more and more into. It's a multicultural city. It's actually a majority-minority, minority-majority city. So we want the department to be reflective. We want the department to understand, to be sensitive, as you said, the shift to better, a stronger connection with the community, community needs, concerns about policing. We want to address those right up front with new recruits. The atmosphere and the actions and the way that officers conduct themselves, and understanding sensitivity, de-escalation. You know, there's a movement, and it's a positive one, out of some very, very bad, and you don't only have to turn your TV on to watch George Floyd trial and know how terrible things can happen. But with individuals saying we want to put more resources into efforts that could avoid the necessity of police officers. So that works well for the community. It's a less challenging, a less charged environment, and it's better for the department because it allows for the allocation of manpower resources to things that definitely need, you know, at the end of a 911 call, a siren and a car would an officer to pull up.
Totally. And you know what, Mayor Ganim, I'm glad you touched on the what's happening nationally. I mean, I talk a lot to local officials here on the show and how I think a lot of officers, unfortunately, have gotten such a bad rap. And for, you know, and I understand what's obviously going on nationally and cracking down on it. But I also think there are a lot of officers who are getting the brunt of something. And you know, when I look at Bridgeport, where you do have a lot of men and women who serve that city and have been doing that proudly. But during this year specifically, too, there's been a lot of focus on the police department. We've looked at what's gone on with the former chief, A.J. Perez. You also have some it seems like discrepancy, not from your office, but from other officers over the current acting chief, Rebecca Garcia. So were you nervous to launch something like this, knowing that just looking at Bridgeport specifically, there has been a lot of kind of erupting, I don't want to say drama, but things going on with the department to now bring in recruits, or do you feel like the timing is now?
No, I think the timing is now. I think there's stability under acting chief, but Chief Rebecca Garcia. But you're right. I mean, look, you didn't really talk about controversies, and well, you talk about controversies, but not necessarily lawsuits. So I won't in particular, because those happen, but they happen a lot, and I don't mean to minimize them. They're important, and they need to be aired. And if the people feel compelled enough, to say, wait a minute, something's wrong here, let's try and correct it, that has to run its process, and it's doing that. But I feel very confident that this effort, as I said to the yesterday, yes, we're recruiting, bringing individuals in for recruits. They will be patrolmen or the beginning rank. But ultimately, if we do it right, if they're trained right, if we pick the best and the brightest, and we they'll be the leadership of the department at some point. You know, the legacy of this is that if we do it right now, whether it is in 10 years or 20 years, but as the process goes on, these new officers with even hopefully a better skill set because of better training and a recognition and awareness will develop into the leadership of a department that's always striving, as we all do in our lives. I know we do as a city, and the department does, to be even better, to correct mistakes of the past, and there clearly are some, and to avoid them in the future. So that's the goal here. But it was uplifting. I have a female to my left. I had a female Latino. Speaks probably better as good Spanish as English, and the right council president as well. But I pointed out that we need more women. We need more people of color. We need more Bridgeport residents to be a part of this team, this public safety team called the police department, and join in with. If you're civilian now, which you are, if you're applying, then you're looking at it from one side. Take that perspective. If you think that there's things that we can improve, and bring it on as a member of the police department and be a part of it. I know there's so many officers that do that. They pull me aside and say, hey, we joined. It's a tough job. It's the toughest job to do, but we're doing it for the right reasons. We want to make the community better. We want to be out there for all the right reasons. And that's what this is about, launching that, as you said, making that shift in Bridgeport started yesterday.
Yeah, and my understanding, Mayor Ganim, is that when I got off the phone with Rowena, you guys already had like 40 or some on applications in, which is great. People are responding.
Great. That's day one. And so there will be a competitive process, and that will allow us to pick the, they'll get tested, whoever that, and then there'll be a list. And then from that list, you get rated on your scores. So we'll be able to move immediately with some people call the top candidates. I don't really know how they rank, but regardless of that, they'll be able to move ahead with that into training. And then be supportive of all the concepts that are so critical that need to be reinforced. Community policing, as I said, in training, they will be enhanced on understanding of challenges today, 2021, in Bridgeport in the United States. How to de-escalate, how to avoid confrontations, and some of the responses that were 911 calls where people have said, "Hey, wait a minute, do you really need a police officer to do that? It's a mental health issue." There is a shift going on, so to speak, to use the terminology, within our allocation of resources with departments too, and the city council continues to play a role in that as well.
Yeah. Well, Mayor Ganim, we appreciate you coming on, talking about this in length this morning. Thank you so much, and we'll talk again next week.
Yeah, we'll talk again. Harborfront, waterfront development, jobs coming to Bridgeport, 100 jobs. Don't want to miss that. The governor was here. The congressman was here. And they just really hit the notes that maybe I should need to, coming out of COVID, we need to hit now, that things are moving. Jobs are being created. The waterfront's being developed. They looked around from there, around the corner to the other parts of Steel Point, to the amphitheater. Congressman Himes was very eloquent in recognizing some of the things that are happening in Bridgeport and the South End, and saying, you know what, the city on the move now, we're coming out of COVID, let's do it right, let's continue to keep the city moving for the benefit of the residents and beyond. So thanks so much for having me, and I look forward to being on with you again next week.
Yeah, sounds good.
Connecting commerce to your community. Bridgeport Regional Business Council President and CEO Dan Onofrio is on the Listen in the Morning on WICC 600.
Dan Onofrio, we had a big announcement earlier this week out of Bridgeport having to do with Boatworks, bringing about 100 jobs into Bridgeport, also a massive fleet. I mean, just seeing these crazy huge ships coming into our port, it's pretty awesome. I mean, did you expect some kind of an announcement like this?
Yeah, well, we knew something. Good morning, first of all, Melissa. We knew something was brewing, you know, with Harry Bordson and the Kristoff family. They had mentioned a while back that they were working on some things for the boatyard. And, you know it's a big deal when the governor's in town and Congressman Himes and the commissioner of the ECD, David Layman, and the deputy direct commissioner as well, and Mayor Ganim. So it was just great to see the activity down there. And the announcement itself was fantastic, you know, including the news came out from New York. So you knew it was a big deal, the announcement itself. So we were happy to be there, too.
So I do want to say, Dan, I know that a lot of people obviously very excited to hear about this. And unfortunately, in the era of social media, I think bits and pieces kind of get out there and people somewhat get the story right. But then others are just totally off basis. There were some people on social media saying, oh, this is great. Hornblower coming in. We can't wait for the casino. And I'm like, wait, what are you guys talking about? What planet are you on? So do you mind just kind of backtracking really quickly and just giving the basis, like, who is Hornblower? What are we seeing here? What is the deal that's now coming to Bridgeport?
Sure, absolutely. So Hornblower, the name is nationally recognized,
yes.
But more locally here, if you're in Manhattan, if you're taking rides out to the Statue of Liberty or Ellis Island, they are the operators of those dining and sightseeing cruises and the tour shuttles in and around the Statue of Liberty and Ellis Island. So they have, I think, if I'm not mistaken, 150-ish vessels in the Northeast.
Wow.
And those vessels, being passenger vessels, they need to be serviced and maintained. And what better location than the old director site in Bridgeport Harbor to maintain those vessels. And we're one of many. I mean, we're not the only Bridgeport won't be the only port where they'll be maintaining those vessels and servicing them. But it'll be a very good strategic location for Hornblower.
Wow. And I know I was seeing actually from this announcement a couple big things. Like you mentioned, Harry Bordson of Bridgeport Boatworks looking to still expand his company's footprint with the Steel Point property. What's the latest on that?
Man, hat tip to the Kristoff family and Harry over at Boatworks. I mean, just the vision that they've been able to start out here. You know, I know the Steel Point Peninsula has been in the works for decades, and seeing the Kristoff family dedicated to that and bringing in the Boatworks to start revitalizing that director shipyard. You know, and Harry's done a great job the last few years of re-energizing that particular shipyard and with smaller retail yachts and other commercial vessels. You know, we've seen the activity just looking out our window over the harbor over the last couple of years. You could see the ships coming in and out. So now to be looking out at the harbor and seeing not just the Bridgeport, Port Jeff ferry coming and going, and seeing these Hornblower vessels coming in and out, it's really exciting. And more importantly, the job creation that it's going to have, and that's what we're most excited about. You know, their vision for that whole area there, it's starting to come together. You know, and I think that's the excitement. So we're not only bringing people back to the water, but we're seeing the vessels coming in from, you know, Long Island and New York and everywhere else as well. So it's an exciting time for Bridgeport.
Yeah, and Dan Onofrio of the Bridgeport Regional Business Council, I do want to talk about recruitment in just a quick second. But another side note, which I thought was really cool that we learned earlier this week, Housatonic Community College is going to be working on a training program to begin an apprentice program. Awesome. I love this. Could you talk maybe a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, they've done a really great job. All the universities and the community colleges in the area have done a really good job of trying to fill the skills gap. And we've seen it with Housatonic Community College with their advanced manufacturing program. So similarly, they're looking to, you know, help out because it's not just the Hornblower skills that will be needed for service and maintenance on these huge ferries, but we also have, don't forget, the Vineyard Winds project. And that whole area down there is going to be a staging facility for the wind farm that's going out into the past Long Island Sound out by Massachusetts. So, you know, there's jobs coming to Bridgeport, and we need to be positioned and get our talent that's in the area skilled and prepared for these opportunities. So Housatonic Community College has had a great history around that already, and they're looking to, you know, get their foothold in around the maritime opportunities as well.
So, Dan Onofrio, let's talk about recruitment. I mean, that's the big headline that honestly we've been seeing for the past couple of days. 100 jobs coming to Bridgeport, 100 jobs, all these jobs coming to Bridgeport. Are we opening up that, you know, like are we opening up those applications now? When does that process start if people are interested? Like, how can they learn more if they are qualified for it? Has that process started, or are we still in like the planning stages?
Yeah, I think we're still very much in the planning stages, specifically around the Vineyard Winds project. I think we're getting closer, and now with the hornblower stuff happening, you know, that'll start evolving. I don't think we're going to see vessels coming into the harbor until later this year, as the boat works and that facility gets prepared to handle the volume coming through there. But this is where, you know, the business council plays a big role. So what we're doing, Melissa, is we're starting a three-part series around this whole workforce development stuff. And it's somewhat got started. The conversation started around the whole COVID response and recovery, because as you can imagine, many people have been displaced over the last year or so.
Sure. Yeah.
But we also have to think about the kids, that are in our technical schools, you know, going into the community colleges and universities. How do we align those business opportunities with the talent that's coming out so we can keep these kids here? So what we're doing is the first part of this workforce development series. We're launching tomorrow. It's free. It's open to the public. So for anyone that is interested, if you go to our website, brbc.org, 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. tomorrow, we're going to talk about career pathways. And we've got Kelly Marie Valeres, who's the executive director of the Connecticut Office of Workforce Strategy. She'll be speaking, and then that's going to lead right into a panel discussion where we have some local resources right here in Bridgeport with Career Resources and the Department of Labor, Rich DuPont from Housatonic Community College, and then the workplace, talking about, okay, how do we create these career pathways, and how can people that are looking to either go through a career transition or find out of opportunities, how best to leverage the resources that exist here in Connecticut. Because there are plenty of opportunities. It's just sometimes we do a poor job of connecting the businesses that are looking to fill roles with the talent that exists here. So we're just trying to create another opportunity for folks that are looking to get themselves back into the workforce, because it's important to keep people employed and keep our economy going. And that's what we do at the Business Council.
Totally. So if you do want to, you want to check that out tomorrow morning starting at 9 o'clock. Again, the website is B as in boy, R, B as in boy, C.org, as in Bridgeport Regional Business Council. And Dan Onofrio, always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Melissa. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too. Four. Yes, I'm headed to the golf course right now because I talk about them all the time. Steve Roach, who is the pro at Fairchild Wheeler Golf Course on the Bridgeport Fairfield line, is here this morning. Steve, I'm going to be honest with you. I've told a lot of people if they want to play hooky this week, they can. I told them they can to go play golf. Yep.
We're ready.
We're ready. We're good. You guys are open all year round, but I've got to imagine you, Irv, the whole team there, you guys get really busy around the springtime.
Right around the springtime, the beginning of March and right into the middle of March, then it picks up quite a bit.
So how has it been, especially since the warmer weather has finally arrived? How busy have you guys been?
Just about sold out on both courses. Definitely on the weekends, and definitely a lot during the week. We still have the high school tryouts going on. So when the other courses are closed, we get hit by all the local high schools to come and use the golf course for their tryouts.
So cool. I love Fairchild Wheeler. I talk about you guys all the time because, you know, for anyone who doesn't know, I have known Steve Roach. Oh, gosh. How long have we known each other, Steve? I mean, you've basically trained every person in our family how to play golf except for my dad. Yeah, I mean, Steve was like the guy who was totally fine with my beagle for so many years going and hanging out on the golf course. So, I mean, we go really
far.
Love that dog. Miss that dog. He loved you guys. You guys were awesome to him. Steve, tell people about Fairchild Wheeler. What kind of sets you guys apart? Why are you so popular? If people have never been before, tell us about it.
You know, Fairchild has been around since 1934. And at one point, it was really the only game in town. So we have two 18-hole golf courses that are they're beautiful, both of them in their own way. One is a little bit more scenic, has a little bit more variety, which we call the black course. The red course is what we call player friendly. It's a little bit more open. You definitely get around a lot faster, and it's just two very good golf courses that are just a ton of fun to play.
Mm-hmm. And it's open to the public, which is what I love. Look, I think golf is one of those sports that when you invest in it, your clubs alone, my husband just bought two new clubs in the last week, and I'm like, ooh, that bill is going to be fun. Golf can be expensive. So, I mean, when you have to pay for like a membership, it kind of turns people away from golf. What's nice is anyone can go to Fairchild Wheeler. It's really, really nice.
That's correct. So we're owned by the city of Bridgeport. So any resident from the city of Bridgeport is welcome to come up and get a, a resident ID card or the resident season pass. But we do, we are open to anybody, Fairfield, Easton, Westport. We still get a lot of those visitors.
Mm-hmm. And you guys, one of my favorite things growing up going to Fairchild Wheeler for so long, I personally am not the best golfer in the family. In fact, I'm the only one that doesn't like avidly play. But I love getting lunch up there. What is it? It's like 18 hole, or what is it called?
The 19th hole.
19th hole. There you go. So yeah, you guys have great food up there as well. I love getting lunch, talking to all the players. It's really, really fun. And your staff there is very cool. And right now we've got Steve Roach, who's here, who's the head pro at Fairchild Wheeler Golf Course. Now, Steve, I'm hearing about this new technology y'all are going to roll out, the Temple Walk by Club Car. What is that?
So we bought in four of these machines, and they are essentially electric caddy. So you put your bag on it. It has a mini cooler for your water. It has a little station for your sand bottle. And you have a transmitter that goes on the back of your belt. And it's the coolest thing. It's the most convenient thing you've ever seen. And it follows you around like a very obedient dog. And when you get to your ball, you simply turn off the transmitter. You hit your shot. And in your case, probably you're in the middle of the fairway, and then you'll hit your ball into the middle of the green, I'm sure. And then you turn it back on. You walk up to the green and you turn it off and do your putting or your chipping or whatever. And it follows you around. It doesn't hold up play. And it's just the most relaxing thing. And especially here, we have a few holes that are big hills. And it's like nothing walking up these hills when you don't have to carry anything. So we really love the new technology. And we're trying to hit the millennials, if you will, and we're starting to attract a lot of new faces here because of it.
Okay, so this to me, for the Star Wars fan in me, this to me sounds like a BB-8 or like an R2-D2, like literally having a droid follow you around. This is so friggin' cool, I can't even tell you.
It is, and you're not that far off, because it also has the GPS unit on it, so it can give you yardages to the middle of the green, the front of the green, or the back of the green. It can tell you how far you hit your drive. It really has a lot of technology on it.
This literally is R2-D2 on the golf course. I love it. I'm obsessed with this idea. Now, Steve Roach, I did hear you say you have four of them on property, correct?
Yes.
So do you have to reserve it ahead of time? Because I've got to imagine every person who's listening right now who's going to book a tee time is going to ask for this bad boy.
They're welcome to call in and talk to anybody that's working behind the counter to book your tee time, and just put a request in that you'd like for us to put one aside for them.
That's so cool. I mean, they've got to be used every single time. I would imagine every day those guys are booked out. I would want that. I want that.
Yeah.
I just want that in general.
They go pretty quick, and wow. And they're great in that it can go 36 holes without needing any type of a charge. We just charge them overnight.
Wow. So are you guys going to try to expand and get more of those?
Hopefully, if needed. There's some courses in the area that have as many as 10 to 15.
Wow. That's really cool. But do you guys still hire? I'm sure you guys still hire caddies. I know my best friend who used to go to prep when we were in high school, he caddied at Fairchild for a long time, actually. Do you guys still have caddies or no?
No, we do not have caddies here. They used to have caddies here a while ago, but I think it became a little bit of a liability.
Mm, okay,
but,
that makes
some
sense.
Some of the country clubs in the area have caddies.
Well, there you go. So you can just bring R2-D2 around with you, but you got to book it ahead of time. Steve Roach, where are you guys located if people want to do a round of golf?
2390 Easton Turnpike in Fairfield. It's weird. We're owned by the city of Bridgeport, but we are in Fairfield, right next to Sacred Heart.
Yeah, University. Very true. Yeah, you're kind of in the middle of everything. It's very cool. Yeah. It's a beautiful area, two courses. And, okay, Steve, I tried to ask our meteorologist earlier this week. He would not back me up. But would you say off the record it's okay for people to play hooky this week to go play golf?
I give the permission for hooky. No problem.
Cool.
I won't tell.
Okay, perfect. So you're seconding that. Perfect. All right, so there you go. So Steve and I are saying go play golf. This is the perfect weather to do it. Unfortunately, the weekend doesn't look that great, so you should do it during the weekday. I agree with you. I'm agreeing with you, Steve.
There you go. I like it.
Steve Roach of Fairchild Wheeler, the pro up there, the head pro, I should say. Thank you so much for coming on. I always love having you on the show.
My pleasure, as always.
All right, we'll talk soon.
It's time to go beyond the classroom and check in with the Discovery Museum. It's science you may not know on WICC 600.
So NASA apparently is getting ready for humanity's first heavier-than-air-powered flight on another planet, which would be Mars. David Mestre is here now for Science You May Not Know. And David, what can you tell me about this mission out of this world? I love it.
This is going to be fantastic, yeah. So, we have sent a rover to the surface of Mars. Mm-hmm. The name of the rover is Perseverance, otherwise known as Percy. And Percy actually had a passenger. And I think we talked about this special passenger strapped to its belly was a helicopter.
Yes, Ingenuity.
Yes, Ingenuity. Congratulations. That's right.
I love that little helicopter. I love it. It's so cute.
This is amazing. So right now, Ingenuity is actually standing on its own on the surface of Mars. And so it was for a while basically strapped to the belly, and it was covered in a little kind of like a little can that just kind of protected it during the flight.
Mm-hmm.
Probably about a week or so ago, they dropped that can to reveal Ingenuity for the first time. But it was kind of folded up like a butterfly. And so they had to do all these maneuvers to be able to just let it settle onto the surface by deploying its legs, making sure that the front legs are ready, that the back legs, they're locked in. And then the big maneuver, which was really scary for everybody, was that they had to drop it 4 inches to let it go.
Was it okay?
It did. Yep. We got a picture of it on the surface.
Oh, okay, good.
Now, NASA, the way they do things is they do this incrementally in little steps. And so now that it was on the surface, the next thing it had to do, and this was probably around April 3rd when they kind of like dropped it, because it was on its own, it no longer had the electrical power from Perseverance to run all of its electronics and, most importantly, its heaters to keep it warm when the temperatures on Mars overnight can go down to like 130 degrees below zero Fahrenheit,
which is just insane.
Which is insane, yeah. So we can now say that it survived. It survived its first cold night on its own on the surface of Mars.
Buddy, and so nice job.
Yeah,
nice
you're doing job. Good. You're doing good. You're okay. So next step is today. We're gonna wiggle the wings.
Oh, this is like a bird taking flight for the first time. This is so cute.
It is. It really is. It's like, like the mother, So Perseverance actually had to kind of like back away, let it be on its own for a little while.
Yeah.
And it's taking pictures and movies. And it actually has a microphone. So we actually can hear the sounds that the little helicopter will be making. Now, the big step is when you've got wings, you got to fly.
And
that's
ideally.
That's the whole, ideally you're going to, but flying on Mars is really difficult. And because, Mars has such a thin atmosphere, it's really only like 1% of the atmosphere that you have here on Earth.
What? That's crazy.
So you don't have really a lot of air to fly in. And so this was a real challenge. So the wings, they're double, stacked helicopter, rotary wings. They're about 4 feet long, so they're really, and they're made of carbon fiber. They had to be really super, super light.
Mm.
And the whole thing had to be no more than about 4 pounds on Earth. And
oh my gosh.
When we get it to Mars, it's going to be a lot less, probably about maybe, 2 pounds or like a pound and a half, something around that. And then we're thinking that April 11th is going to be the day that we're going to just try a flight.
Oh, my gosh. And this Sunday.
This Sunday, yeah. So,
wow.
So it'll be pretty late. So what's going to happen? Because we're on Mars time. We're not on Earth time anymore. And a Mars day is actually 40 minutes longer than an Earth day. And so what happens is that anybody that's working on any Mars mission, they actually have two clocks. They've got their Mars clock, and then they've got their Earth clock. So they have to punch on Mars time.
That's crazy.
And so if it's daytime on Mars, it could be nighttime here, but
right.
You're on Mars time. So you may spend like months at a time on Mars time, and it really kind of wrecks your day because you're on a completely different kind of a clock.
Right. Well, no, I can imagine that. Yeah. As I'm thinking about it, I'm like, all right, 40 minutes behind every day. That's crazy. Yeah. That makes sense. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they're going to send a command to Perseverance, the rover. Rover is then going to relay that command to the helicopter, and then the helicopter is going to execute its first maneuver. And if it can do that, it's going to power up its wings, and it's probably going to be like 2,000 RPM. These things have to go really, really fast
wow.
to be able to generate enough lift to be able to go up. And we think we're going to try for 10 feet. You know, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to try for 10 feet. We're going to move forward a little bit, and then we're going to move it back. But this is all done autonomously. It has a computer on board and sensors and cameras to be able to literally fly itself. We just tell it what to do,
wow.
and then it'll determine what's the best flight path to be able to execute that command. And so if that happens, this is all going to be captured by Perseverance's cameras.
Wow.
And so we'll be able to see for the first time this groundbreaking moment of an aerial flight on Mars.
Okay, so David, this is very cool. I just have a quick question, David Mestre of the Discovery
sure.
Museum. So I'm not trying to be a pessimist. I'm not. I'm just asking a question.
If
cute little helicopter ingenuity, by some chance, even if it doesn't crash, but it lands and something breaks. So, like, what do you do? I mean, is there a way that we could fix it up there, or do we have to kind of start?
No.
There's nothing.
We're just going to, nothing, yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah, I mean. Yep,
now I'm stressed. Now you have stressed
yeah.
me out.
Yeah, this is This is a technology demonstration. So,
oh, my gosh.
So this was just, you know, can we even do this?
Right.
But sometimes technology demonstrations actually lead down a path where we develop these technologies and mature them to the point where we really can do some cool things. So, for example, like we've got this rover on Mars. It's about the size of a car. But we actually started back in the, you know, the mid-90s with a technology demonstration. Do rovers even work on Mars? And so our first rover on Mars was no bigger than a microwave oven. That's
right.
It.
Right,
and
right.
So,
that's true. That's true.
Yeah. And so it was like, can this even work? Can
mm-hmm.
we even do this? Can it even drive itself?
Yeah.
You know, we and the rover, whose name was Sojourner, which, by the way, was actually named in a naming contest, and the winner was a school child from Bridgeport, Connecticut.
That is so cool.
Yeah,
that's so,
so
cool.
We've got a little piece of Bridgeport on Mars.
Look at that.
And,
see?
And so
perfect.
If it works, we will have an added capability. We may be able to add more, aerial kinds of missions to our exploration of Mars, because we can do things in orbit, and that's good. So we get a really good global mapping. We can do things right on the ground with a rover.
Mm-hmm.
But if we had some aerial component, then we can do that thing in the middle. Like, you know, we can get like, you know, a little bit closer and
yeah.
do really good surveys
True.
Of areas. Yeah. And so that's like having your own drone on the surface of Mars. But
yeah.
everything has to be done completely autonomously. So it's all on ingenuity now. All on ingenuity.
I was going to say, I know this is happening on hopefully Sunday. So, David, next week, despite whatever your topic is, let's at least get like a little update, if you don't mind, next Wednesday to see how ingenuity went. Is that okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right,
so,
cool.
So everybody keep your fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Yep. Oh, yeah, and the cool thing is that because this is such a Wright Brothers moment, it actually has a little piece of the fabric of the wing of the Wright Brothers' first airplane mounted on Ingenuity.
That is so cool. I love that little. I love how NASA does that. They put these like little intricate things into their. I'll say experimental trials and everything. That's very cool. Yeah, I love that. I love that little detail. And yes, fingers crossed. Instead of the little engine that could, this is the little helicopter that could. So thank you, David.
Helicopter. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm very nervous and excited for April 11th. We'll see what happens, David Mestre of the Discovery Museum.
I'll keep you posted.
All right. Cool. Thank you so much, David. Appreciate it.